This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. It can be difficult for anyone to talk about a cancer diagnosis, but it's even more difficult when that cancer is in a part of the human body that we'd simply prefer not to talk about. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and that reluctance to talk about it is part of what makes this month so important. Colorectal cancers are one of the most common cancers in the United States, and according to the American Cancer Society, more than 4% of people will develop one of these cancers during their lifetime. Dr. Carrie Peterson is an assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin in the Division of Colorectal Surgery. She joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers in studio.
So I'm going to start with a question that might sound a little pedantic, but I think gets to a real misunderstanding about colorectal cancer. What is it? What kind of cancer is it?
So the colon and the rectum compose the large intestine. It's sort of the backside, the end of the GI tract, if you will. It's about 6 feet long, extending from the right side, going up and over and around, and then coming out your anus. So the colon is the first part of it, and the rectum is the last about foot, perhaps. And the function of the large intestine is primarily to change the intestinal contents from liquid into something solid that you can pass pretty easily. So it absorbs water and some electrolytes primarily as its significant function. And then cancer is any kind of growth that occurs within that organ, colorectal cancer. And we lump them together because they share a lot of characteristics. We do treat them a little bit differently, which is sort of interesting. But that's the primary sort of explanation behind that.
So is the main difference then between something like colon cancer and rectal cancer just where it is?
Correct. Yep, absolutely. The difference in where it's located. So the colon is that first part, the first 5 feet, and then the rectum is the last foot. And the rectum is sort of interesting because it is really within the confines of the bony pelvis. So it's bounded anatomically really differently than the colon is. The bladder is there. If you're a woman, there's a vagina and a uterus. There's bones from the tailbone and the sacrum and the hips that essentially surround the rectum almost entirely. So treating it is a lot different because it's a lot harder to get to for surgical treatments than the colon is, which is out free within the belly.
I was about to say, there's a lot of stuff that's just happening in that area in general. And when it comes to colon cancer, rectal cancer, obviously these are parts of our body that are in use constantly and constantly processing things inside of us. Yeah. Do we know what some of the causes of cancer in these parts of our body are?
We don't have a great understanding. There's a small number of patients that have a genetic cause, and we understand those fairly well. But in the vast majority of people, which is probably about 90% of patients, we don't really have a clear cause, an outright cause. There are some things that can predispose people to getting colorectal cancer, and we think there are some environmental things that can play an influence, and that's probably the biggest contributor. But we don't have a single sort of thing that we can say, like for lung cancer, for example, if you're a cigarette smoker or a pipe smoker, that tobacco and smoke exposure is a huge risk factor for lung cancer. But we don't have anything like that for colon cancer.
There's no silver bullet.
There's no silver bullet. Yeah, no.
If you do have colorectal cancer and it is more advanced, let's say even just stage one and beyond, how deadly is this cancer?
Well, if we look at all comers, so essentially everybody diagnosed with colon cancer, regardless of stage, in 5 years' time, 65% of patients will still be alive. So it's actually pretty good when you think about it compared to some other cancers like lung and pancreas, for example, which have worse outcomes. If you look at stage by stage, colon cancer, of course, the lower your stage, the better off you're going to be. So for stage one cancers, so these are really small cancers that haven't spread to the lymph nodes that drain the colon or anywhere else in the body, 5-year survival is about 95%. So the sooner we catch it, the better off you're going to be.
When it comes to the symptoms of colorectal cancer especially, it seemed like they were also symptoms associated with a myriad of other conditions. So what are some of those kind of earmarks of colorectal cancer?
Yeah, bleeding is primarily the biggest symptom and one that people should watch out for. So if you have any kind of blood that shows up in your stool, that should be investigated and figured out where that's coming from. It doesn't always mean it's cancer, but it can be an indication.
Well, and when it comes to blood, what are we talking about? Because that gets confusing too.
I was going to clarify, so thank you. Yeah, so you can actually see bright red blood, so fresh blood, that can show up. And that's characteristic of rectal cancers in particular. But it could also be blood that gets mixed in with the stool. And so you might not actually see blood. It can actually present as being anemic. So your blood counts within your blood vessels are low. You go to the doctor, you're feeling tired and fatigued, and they check your blood counts and you're anemic. And that can be another sign of cancer as well. Essentially, cancer that's bleeding, it gets mixed in with the stool, you don't see it outright, but we can do tests to investigate for that. And that can be another way that bleeding comes and presents in patients. So that's a symptom.
So if you're someone who has blood in their stool, someone who I think losing weight was another.
Losing weight can occur. Yeah, absolutely. Most often happens with more advanced tumors. So it's a later sign than other symptoms. And honestly, a lot of people with especially small early cancers don't really have symptoms. And that's the tricky part about colon cancer and one of the reasons that we recommend screening tests to try and identify people early so we can intervene.
So if you're someone who is afraid that this is a cancer you might have, maybe you've seen bleeding, maybe you have a family history of it, mm-hmm. What would screening look like for you?
So if you're an average risk person, so essentially that means you don't have any personal history of colon cancer, you don't have any first degree relatives, so parents, siblings, or children with colorectal cancer, and you don't have any risk factors like inflammatory bowel disease or radiation exposure, all right, and you're over the age of 45, they just changed that recommendation now, you know. Then we would recommend that you start screening at about the age of 45. And there's lots of different screening options available. We generally lump them into one of two categories. So either a stool test or a visualization test. So the stool tests are very easy to do. It's essentially a test that looks for either blood or shed DNA within the stool itself. And so you can just do it at home. You essentially use the little kit, send the stool sample in, and then you'll get results back. And so it's pretty easy to do. Obviously, if it comes back positive, it needs to be investigated a little bit further because blood can be caused by other things besides cancer. So in that case, we would recommend another test, which is one of the visualization tests, like a colonoscopy, for example. That's the most famous one, right? And in that exam, it's a day surgery procedure. You essentially go into the office. They use a special camera on the end of a flexible scope to look at the inside of your colon and to look at potential sources for where that bleeding would be coming from and look for cancers. We can do things during that procedure that actually make it pretty advantageous. Of course, we can remove polyps, and we can take biopsies of cancers, and sometimes we can even remove really small cancers and treat them outright. So it's a really powerful test, which is why a lot of us really like to prefer that in some way. But it has risks. Not everyone can have that procedure. It requires sedation. It, you know, has risks like other procedures do. So it is something to be kind of cognizant of when you're talking about screening. So there's different options that people can choose from.
It's a screening that I think a lot of people have heard of and a lot of people have mixed feelings about. If you've ever prepared for a colonoscopy, even just the preparation is a little cumbersome.
Right. Yeah. And I would say most people, it's the preparation that's the barrier to getting this done, right? They don't want to spend an evening in the bathroom cleaning out their colon so everyone can get a good look with the scope the next day. To be honest, that's really the worst part about it, though, because you are asleep for the procedure itself. Most people don't even really remember it because we give you some medication, so you don't really remember. And once it's done, then, you know, you can be if everything is clear, potentially 5 to 10 years, depending on what they find. So it's a long time to be able to not have to worry about it.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, inside of a colonoscopy, sometimes you can remove, I'm guessing, a stage one or a pre-stage one.
Right, correct.
Kind of mm-hmm. cancer.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. What if you have these screenings and they find a more advanced cancer or a larger cancer that can't be taken out in this way?
Right. So colon cancer, so this is when we should talk about colon cancer a little bit differently than rectal cancer. So colon cancer is primarily treated with surgery. So when people are diagnosed with a new colon cancer on a colonoscopy, there's a few tests that we get to start off with, scans to look to see if the tumor has spread anywhere else primarily, and some blood tests that help us follow along during the course of the treatment. If the scan shows that there's no tumor anywhere else, then surgery is the primary treatment for that. And we would remove the part of the colon where that tumor is located, the lymph nodes that drain that area, and potentially put people back together all in one operation. With rectal cancer, it's a little bit different. And because of the anatomical confines of the pelvis, as we talked about, rectal cancer is usually treated with chemotherapy and radiation before surgery, and that accomplishes a few things. It gets the tumor to shrink down in size to make our operation a little bit better, and essentially decreases the chance that that tumor will come back down the road. And that's been traditionally the big struggle with rectal cancer, is the chances of it coming back is a lot higher than with colon cancer.
So one of the concerns that some people have about something like colon cancer, rectal cancer, the procedure can often come with some kinds of risks, which we've talked about.
Right. So the biggest thing I think that people are concerned about is the need to have a colostomy bag or some kind of an ostomy bag as a result of surgery. And what that is essentially bringing the intestine out to the skin instead of connecting it to the anus. And then you have an appliance or a little plastic bag that sticks to your skin, and your stool comes out of that piece of intestine and goes into the bag. And people are very concerned about this, understandably. It's an adjustment when this is needed. But the vast majority of the time, we don't have to have a permanent bag. Most colon surgery in particular, that's not required. And for a lot of rectal cancer surgery as well, a permanent bag isn't needed. Now, sometimes we do use a temporary ostomy to help the rectal cancer surgery heal, but usually it's only for a short period of time.
Okay.
And I would say that while it's a bit of an adjustment for patients to get used to it, once they've got the hang of it, it's really pretty straightforward and people do great. And you wouldn't even really know most of the time, if you're just looking at someone walking on the street or at the grocery store, that this is what's going on. So it's very manageable.
You know, we talked about kind of the causes and a lot of the mystery of what causes colorectal cancer. Mm-hmm. But do we know of any ways to at least reduce your chances of developing either colon cancer or rectal cancer?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds kind of hokey, but the best recommendations we have right now are sort of what your mom would say, like eat a healthy diet. And by healthy, we mean high fiber, lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains particularly. Get exercise, maintain a healthy weight, and don't smoke tobacco is another one, actually. Tobacco use is a huge risk factor for colon cancer. So, but other than that, no. There's some data that things like calcium and vitamin D and anti-inflammatory medications might play a role in reducing the risk, but that data is not really conclusive at this point in time, so we don't recommend necessarily taking a daily aspirin to reduce your colon cancer risk, per se.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dr. Peterson, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Carrie Peterson is an assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin in the Division of Colorectal Surgery. She spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers in light of Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month.